Philo Torah Zoom Shiur for Yom Sheni, Monday, the fifth day of Nisan. Yeah, sounds good.
Yes, my
57
grandfather's yard site.
Corresponding to March 23rd. Tehillim Kuf. Mizmar l'todah, hariu l'Adonai kol ha'aretz, ivdu et Adonai b'simcha, bo'u l'fanav birnana. Da'u ki Adonai hu Elohim, hu asanu v'lo anachnu, amo v'tzon marito. Bo'u sha'arav b'todah, chatzerotav b'tehillah, hodu lo baruchu shemo, ki tov Adonai le'olam chasto, v'ador v'ador emunato. Started saying that on these cards when we get the all clear after a hatra'ah followed by an azaka, go for it, David. Tilim kaf.
Let me not say, Yach Mizmor, Le David, Yancha Adonai B'Yom Tzara, Yisakev Hashem, Elohe Yaakov, Yishlach Ezracha Mikodesh, Mitzion, Yisadeka, Yizkor Komen Chasecha, Velascha, Yidashna Sela, Yiten Lecha Kilvavecha, Vachal Atzasecha, Yimale, Nirana Nabishua Secha, Vishem Eloheinu Nigol, Yimale Adonai, Komishalo Secha, Ata yadati ki Yoshia Adonai Mashiach Yanehu Mishmei Kodesho Begruos Yesha Yemino E Levarech Evie Levasusim Vanachnu B'Shem Adonai Eloheinu Nazkir Hema Karu V'Nafalu Vanachnu Kamnu V'Nesodod Adonai Hoshia Hamelech Yanehu B'Yom Kareinu.
Kuf Kof Aleph, Shir La Ma'alot, Esa Inai El Heharim, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri, Ezri Me'im Adonai, Ose Shamayim Va'aretz, Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha, Al Yonum Shomerecha, Hine Lo Yonum V'lo Yishan, Shomer Yisrael, Adonai Shomerecha, Adonai Tzilecha, Al Yad Yeminecha, Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'yad olam. Mark.
Mishabirach avosenu Abraham Yitzchak Yaakov v'yivarech es chayalei tzeva hagana liYisrael v'esanchei kohos habitachon ha'omedim al mitmar atzeinu v'arei Eloheinu ועלו חמים ועדינו מן הלבנון ועד מדבר מצרים ומן הים הגדול עד לבוא הערבה וכל מקום שהם ביבשה, באוויר ובים. ייתן אדוני אס אויבינו הקמים עלינו ניגפים לפניהם. הקדוש ברוך הוא ישמור ויציל אס חיילינו מכל צרה וצוקה ומכל נגע ומחלה. וישלח ברכה והצלחה בכל מעשי ידיהם. ידבר שונאינו תחתיהם ויעטרים בחסר ישועה ובעטרת ניצחון. ויקוים בהם הכסוף, כי אדוני אלוהיכם ההולך עמכם להילחם לכם עם אויביכם, להושיע אתכם, ונאמר אמן.
Amen. Together, Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael, Hanatunim Batzara Vashivya, Ha'omedim Bein Bayam, Bein Bayabasha, Uvein Ba'avir, Hamakom Yirachem Alehem, Viotiem, Mitzara Lirvacha, Umeafela Leora, Umishibud Legeula, Hashta Ba'agala Uvizman Kariv, Vinomar Amen. Okay, if you look at my background, let me get out of the way. You have a reminder down here of Birkat Ha'ilanot, the bracha that is said once a year, only during the month of Nisan. Machloket about that, but let's take the mainstream, only during Nisan, on fruit trees that have not started bearing fruit, but have shown their flowers. And on the practical side, it's not that easy. There are people, because the Jewish calendar is not perfectly aligned with the general calendar, which follows the seasons much more accurately than the Hebrew calendar does. We adjust with the extra month every so often, but It doesn't match. So sometimes it's later, sometimes it's earlier, sometimes there was more rain in the winter, sometimes less. And I found, I mean, I have one, two, three, four different fruit trees in my garden. A fifth, which is a grapevine, doesn't count because it's still during the orla period and the fruits have to be edible in order to make the bracha on their flowers, which haven't started anyway. So I have a peach tree that was flowering beautifully. I have an apricot tree, which the flowers blew off in heavy wind that we had recently. And it's a little bit more advanced than the peach because already some little tiny apricots have started to develop, which means I can't use that anyway. The clementina, the tangerine tree, was finished with its clementino, doesn't have any new stuff yet, and the flowers are just beginning. So it's an iffy thing. And then my daughter called me and said, I have flowers on my lemon tree, but my I forgot even what she has, a pomelo hasn't really started yet, so she was looking for a place to make the bracha, and so on. It's a bracha that takes a little effort, just depending on where you live. But I again want to say with enthusiasm that it's a very special bracha because it shows our appreciation for things that are not necessary, but make our world a nicer place to be, thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, there are things that, as I said on last time, that justify their existence because of the main thing we get from them. And I'm not talking just about trees now, it could be anything. And then there are things that are like bonuses. So that's my reminder of Birkat Ilanot. Mark? You say it?
Actually did. Yeah, we were able to say it on Rosh Chodesh. It's not as common around here as I might have expected. South Florida, orange and this and that. But there are people with fruit trees in their yards, and they invite people over to say it. So we were able to do it on Rosh Chodesh.
Very nice. Which trees?
It was a pomegranate tree and a mango. Was it mango? Oh no, an esrog. Pomegranate and an esrog
Nice.
tree.
Our pomegranate hasn't started flowering. It started to leaf, but okay. Anybody else say the bracha? Matt, you have no trees in New Jersey?
When it's 40 degrees or less.
What about you guys from Israel here? I guess I'm not that persuasive when I talk excitedly about a bracha. I don't know.
I mean, last year my brother-in-law had a sign in front of a tree on his front yard for everybody to come and make brachas.
Right, that's a lot very common in Yerushalayim also. Okay.
Yeah.
Shabbat HaGadol coming up quickly. Shabbat HaGadol is the Shabbat before Pesach. Everybody knows that. And the main reason, or at least the original reason that it's called that, is based on the Haftorah, which we read, which has the pasuk towards the end, Hinei Anochi Sholeach Lachem et Eliyah Hanavi. Here I am sending Eliyahu. Lifnei bo Yom Hashem Hagadol v'Hanorah, before the great and awesome day comes, which is a reference to Yimot HaMashiach, v'heishiv lev avot al banim v'lev banim al avotam. Generations will reconcile with each other, and the trigger to name that Shabbat was from the Haftorah, with the reference to not Shabbat HaGadol, but Yom HaGadol. But there are other reasons that are given as well. Before I get to them, Tell me one other Shabbos that is named for its Haftorah.
Shuvah
Correct. That's it.
Yisrael
Right. Two of them. Now I have a, if you, that was too easy a riddle, so I'll ask you another one. What other Shabbat could have been named Shabbat Shuvah because of the same pasuk?
Hazinu
Lech
Asau.
That pasuk is in the Haftorah of Lech Lecha. I don't know why, but that's where it is. Okay. Now the other reason that's given, I think, is more substantial, if I could say that, and that is that Shabbat up until Pesach time, historically, was Zecher LeBriat HaOlam, Zikaron LeMaaseh Bereishit. Shabbos was created by God, who worked 7 days, 6 days, and rested on the seventh. And that's why he was Mekadesh the Shabbat and commanded us to follow it. It picked up a second, there's an adjective I'm missing here. A second reason, I skipped the adjective, you put it in yourself. When it came to right before Yetziat Mitzrayim, and that is the freedom from oppression and slavery to be able to observe Shabbat. Because a slave is at the total beck and call of his master. And he does not have his own calendar, and he does not have his own time, and he does not have his own times for rest. So when we say in Kiddush on Friday night that not only, we don't say it like that, but not only is Shabbat Zikaron LeMaaseh Bereishit, but it is also Zecher LeYetziat Mitzrayim, we're adding a major dimension to Shabbos, which we commemorate, so to speak, on the Shabbat before the Exodus, because we were free on a first level already before we physically got out. And the name Shabbat HaGadol means this is a great Shabbat, because until now it had one reason, and now it has a second major significant reason. I picked up my Chumash to quote you a pasuk, and I don't remember why I picked it up. So I forgot what I was looking for. Oh yeah, of course. I was looking for the Aseret HaDibrot in Vo'et Hanan, because in the first presentation of the Aseret HaDibrot in Parshat Yitro, we have Zachor et Yom HaShabbat L'Kadosho, Kadosho, Sheshet Yomim Tavod V'asita Kol Melachtecha, dot, dot, dot. And then, let me quote it accurately. Ki Sheshet Yomim Asa Adonai Et ha-shamayim ve-et ha-aretz, et ha-yam ve-et kol asher bam, va-yonach ba-yom ha-shvi'i, al-kein be-rach Adonai et yom ha-shabbat va-yikadshehu. The reason given for the command of Shabbat is that God created the world. In Vo'et Hanan, the second presentation of the Aseret HaDibrot, it's different. It starts with Shamor et yom ha-shabbat l'kadshehu, Kasher tzivcha Hashem el Adonai Elohecha, Sheshet yamim ta'avod dot dot dot, v'yom hashvi'i Shabbat l'Hashem Elokecha, dot dot dot. See, I'm not reading the whole pasuk, so I'm saying Hashem. V'zocharta, and you will remember by observing Shabbat, ki eved hayita be'eretz Mitzrayim, v'yotziacha Adonai Elohecha misham, b'yod chazaka u'v'zroa netuya. Al Cain, therefore, Sivcha Adonai Elohecha la'asot et Yom HaShabbat. So the two reasons are given in the two versions of the Aseret HaDibrot, And I guess we could say by the famous Shamor v'zachor b'dibur echad, that applies to the whole Aseret HaDibrot, or the whole, at least, I mean, to the whole thing, which means that Shabbat's two major events, creation and Yetziat Mitzrayim, are more than linked. They're fused into what we're calling Shabbat HaGadol. Comments or questions before I move on? And what I should have told you, and I'm hoping that you'll do it for Wednesday, if not today, is send me some questions that you want me to address vis-a-vis Pesach or the Haggadah. And otherwise, I'll just roll on with the stuff that I have made notes about. There's a custom on Shabbat HaGadol to read the Haggadah from Avadim Hayinu LeFaro B'Mitzrayim, which skips over Kiddush, Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, and even the questions, and begins with Magid, the telling of the story. That's where you start on Shabbat HaGadol, all the way through till the end of Dayenu, before you get to Rabban Gamliel's famous Mishnah. Anyone who has not spoken about Pesach, Matzah, and Maror has not fulfilled his obligation. That doesn't belong on this Shabbos. That's very particular to Seder night. But the custom developed to read the bulk of Magid in the Haggadah from Avadim Hayinu until right before Rabban Gamliel Hoya Omer. The only voice that objects to that minhag is, no surprise, the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon says, look what we say in Haggadah. We say, Yochol me Rosh Chodesh, maybe I should be fulfilling the mitzvah of Vehigadta Levincha Bayom Hahu Lemor, Vehigadta Levincha, tell the story of the Exodus. Maybe I should start from the whole month of Nisan, because in Nisan we were redeemed. Talmud Lomar, no, we learned from the text of that pasuk that it says Bayom Hahu, on that day. I Bayom Hahu, Yochol mi ba'od yom. Maybe I should start telling about the story of the Exodus from the afternoon of what we call Erev Pesach, when the Korban Pesach was being brought and everything was beginning. Talmud Lomar, no, it says Ba'avur Zeh, because of this. And you don't say Ba'avur Zeh unless you have Matzah and Maror Munachim Lefanecha, or Pesach Matzah and Maror Munachim Lefanecha. So the Vilna Gaon argues that the Haggadah itself says not to say it at the beginning of the month of Nisan, not to say it on Erev Pesach in the afternoon, and not to say it on the Shabbat before Pesach. You say it at the Seder night when you have the mitzvot of Matzah and Maror. Makes a lot of sense. So the variation that I think the Vilna Gaon would approve of is not to recite the Haggadah from Avadim Hayinu onward, but to study the Haggadah, to review the Haggadah. That's not the same. You don't have to read all the words, and you don't have to do it as an official recitation, but it's very, very practical to be able to sit down this Shabbos, pull your Haggadah out from the box they're in, or the shelf in the top of the bookcase where they are, and pick one and or a couple of them and go through and find some nice Divrei Torah and other things to share with your people who will be together with you for Seder. I even suggest that you pick the Haggadot that you never use as a table for the Seder because the commentary is too long and you never get to it. It takes too long to read. There are Haggadot that have little tidbits, pardon the expression, and there are Haggadot that have pages and pages of commentary, and that's good to take a look at on Shabbat HaGadol and any other time before Pesach. So that's what I had to say. Now, any one of you who has the minhag of reciting the Haggadah, be my guest. I mean, you don't have to follow the Vilna Gaon. I basically have an attitude, which I'm sure you have caught on to, and that is that opinions that we don't follow still teach us things. So a Seder example that's very illuminating is the Vilna Gaon's Seder plate. The Vilna Gaon Seder plate, there are people who use it, I'm sure, but most people don't, even Vilna Gaon fans like myself, which has Zeruah and a Beitzah, yeah, I get that, has Maror and Charoset, and does not have Karpas on the Seder plate, and does not have three matzot for the Seder, only two, and has Karpas and salt water off the Seder plate. Now, I don't want to confuse you, and if you are, please let me know, raise your hand or whatever. Unmute yourself and say something. I just morphed into something different, so let me continue on that. The concept or idea that is now leading into what I'm going to use as an example, I will repeat that even opinions we don't follow, we learn from. So I remember seeing in some Haggadah, I don't remember which one, in the early pages of introduction before you get to the Haggadah. And I must say also that it's very sad when a person buys a Haggadah and goes to Kaddish for Kiddush and doesn't read some of the material or at least scan some of the material that comes before because you learn things from it. Anyway, one of the Haggadot or more than one that I have has the standard traditional Seder plate that most of us use, which you will see in a moment is less logical than others, but the most common by far, which has Zeruah and Beitzah and Maror, the three of them forming a triangle, or a segol, like a the vowel in Hebrew, eh. And then charoset and karpas and chazeret, which is maror, forming another triangle. Six items on the Seder plate, which some people say, why are there six? What's the difference between chazeret and maror? Because if you look in the Mishnah, in Psachim, it says these are the vegetables that you can fulfill the mitzvah of Maror with. And it mentions Chazeret and Maror, or two out of the five different vegetables. Some of them we don't really have good identification for, but that's not the point. I grew up putting the Maror sticks of horseradish that we would be eating for Maror in the middle of the Seder plate, and in that extra dish below it, the ground up horseradish, which we would use for Korech. But it doesn't have to be like that, and especially if you use lettuce for both. So you have lettuce as Maror in the middle of the Seder plate, and lettuce again in the bottom of the Seder plate for the Korech. Why? One question. And why is karpas on the Seder plate and the salt water is off the Seder plate? Now, this I could answer with one word, like fiddler, tradition. You could answer with a different word, Kabbalah, because this is the Seder plate that I just described, that is that of the Arizal. The Arizal, who is one of the fathers of Kabbalah, and certainly if you're not into Kabbalah, which I am not, when you say, why do we do this? Kabbalah. Yeah, but why? I don't know any more than that. I just say, because it's accepted and it's based on Kabbalistic things, that the salt water is specifically off the Seder plate, but the karpas is on. Then you get to the Ramah, Rav Moshe Isserles. And he has a very reasonable, logical arrangement, which I don't know who follows or how many people follow it. I'm sure somebody does. He has the Zeruah and the Beitzah at the top of the Seder plate. And here you have to imagine a more rectangular arrangement rather than a circular arrangement, but you could put it on any Seder plate. He has Zeruah representing the Korban Pesach and Beitzah representing the Korban Chagiga, specifically the Zeruah on the right-hand side and the Beitzah on the left-hand side, because between the two of them, the main mitzvah of the night is the Korban Pesach, when we have a Beit HaMikdash, and secondarily is the Korban Chagiga that accompanies it, but not in all circumstances. So he has those two on the top. And they're on the top, which means further away from you when you have a horizontal Seder plate, so it's not up and down, it's this way, because those are the two things on the Seder plate that you don't eat and you don't touch. Below that, he has karpas on the right-hand side and salt water on the left-hand side, because when you are reaching, that's what you do next. You have the karpas and you dip it in the salt water. So the karpas is on the right because it's the main, and the salt water is on the left because it's the companion to that. Then he has, I switched it, I think. Put the Maror on the one side and the Charoset on the other side. Maror on the right, Charoset on the left, because Maror is the mitzvah and Charoset is the auxiliary to the Maror. And at the bottom, which you reach first, I should have said that way, you have the Karpas, so you don't pass over, no pun intended, you don't pass over the Maror in order to reach the karpas. You go by the way it's presented on your plate. First is karpas dipped in salt water, then later will be Maror and Charoset, and then at the top, which you're not touching, you have the Zeruah and the Beitzah. So the Ramah puts the salt water on the Seder tay on the Seder plate. And that to me is a little bit more logical than putting the karpas on and keeping the salt water off. Then you get to the Vilna Gaon, and he has on his Seder plate the Zeruah and the Beitzah and Maror and Charoset and not karpas and not the salt water. Those are not on his Seder plate because they are not requirements originally. They are minhagim. Karpas and salt water started as a minhag. We do it because minhagim sometimes take din-like character, which this does. I don't know anybody, including the Vilna Gaon, who doesn't have karpas, but he doesn't put it on his Seder plate to distinguish between the requirements, Zecher leKorban Pesach requirement, Chagiga, and the Maror and Charoset. So that just addresses the Seder plate. So with three of them, you say, okay, I understand the Vilna Gaon not putting karpas or salt water on because it's not a requirement. I understand the Rama putting karpas and salt water because it is what we do. And the least logical one then becomes the Arizal, which puts the karpas on the Seder plate, keeps the salt water off the Seder plate, and doubles up the maror on the Seder plate. Why? I don't know. But that's what we do. That's what most people do. And then you come to something that's not at all halachic or minhagic. I made up that word. And that's the artist's design of a Seder plate, which drives me nuts. They have, and I won't buy any of those. You get them as gifts, that's one thing, but I won't buy any of those. It has the six items in a circle, nothing in the middle. So you have to put your things down according to the traditional way without matching the names engraved or, design on the Seder plate. You know what I'm talking about? That ring a bell? Okay. Then you come to number of matzot. This I've used in the past, and I'll say it again, and maybe some of you have good memories, and maybe some will be refreshed by it, but it also illustrates something else about what you're supposed to be doing at the Seder table. Before that, just let me finish. So I learned something from the Rama's arrangement on the Seder plate and from the Gra, even though I follow the standard traditional Seder plate, not only of the Ari, but of my father and my grandfather. So, but if you mention it, it's interesting to share it with your Seder partners. Then you come the number of matzot. So to me, this is an example of the Arba'a Banim, the four children. I don't like calling them the four sons. And when I buy a Haggadah with an English translation, it's the first thing I look for. And if they call it the four sons, I go to a different Haggadah. If they Some of them now call it the four children. And that's important, and I'll tell you why, and I'm especially talking to the women here. Women, in my experience from my early days, were very, very passive observers of the Seder table. No offense to my own parents, but my memories of my childhood Siddurim were my father, my brothers and I, cousins at the table, my mother bouncing up and back and forth between the dining room and the kitchen, checking on the pots on the stove. And only when it came to Rabban Gamliel, Hoya Omer, Kol Shelo Amar Shlosha Devarim Elu BaPesach Lo Yotza Yedei Chovato, we would make sure that the women were sitting at the table. And whenever they were at the table, even if they were there throughout the table, it was the leader of the Seder, who in my youth was my father, and the boys who had notebooks from school that they had developed in the last month. With all kind of interesting comments and the Divrei Torah about the Seder, and we would share them, and women would just be passive observers. The mitzvah of Vehigadta Levincha Bayom Hahu Lemor applies to men and women, sons and daughters. Now, let me clarify that. The word bincha has two possible translations. It could mean your son, it could mean your child. And there are places in the Torah where ben means male child as opposed to female, son as opposed to daughter. And there are other places where ben means child, including boys and girls. And you sometimes can't figure out which this particular ben means without Torah Sheba'al Peh. Torah Sheba'al Peh says, in the case of a man dying without children, that the word ben there means he dies without any offspring, not what you might think, a man who dies without a son to carry on his name. So his wife, now widow, is to be married to his brother, Yavam and Yavama, unless they terminate their relationship with Chalitza, because a son to be born to the new couple will be named for the deceased brother. So logic would say, well, that doesn't apply to a girl. A daughter is going not going to carry on the name of the father. She'll marry out of the Shevet maybe, or just to someone else with a different last name and a different family, and it's not going to carry on. So why, if a man dies without a son but he has a daughter, is there no Yibum? The basic reason is that's the halacha, the mitzvah as explained, not interpreted, as explained in Torah Sheba'al Peh, is that and he doesn't have a ain lo bain, ben. That includes he has no son or daughter. There are other psukim. I think I'm going a little too much on this now, so I won't bother getting into detail, further detail. And that's where ben means son, but not a daughter. So the question, who is it talking about? It's talking about son or daughter, child, and it's talking to men and women of the Jewish people. So the mitzvah of Haggadah is incumbent on you guys, ladies, that I'm looking at on the screen, and what are the other names on the on my screen that I some you know I naturally gravitate to looking at the people who are pictured rather than the names on the rest of the screen. In any event, women should prepare something to contribute to the Seder, to pick one passage that's your favorite, or you heard a nice Dvar Torah about it, or you saw something in a Haggadah, or you're saying something that nobody else is saying at the Seder table, and push your way in if you have to. You shouldn't have to. But when I ask for people to make comments, that includes males as well as females. So it's on both sides, the recipient of Haggadah, boys and girls, the teachers of the Haggadah are men and women, and children, by definition in this context, is not little kids. It could be little kids, it could be teenagers, it could be adults, it could be people older than you, if you have something to share with them. They don't necessarily have something to share back with you. The best thing, especially for adults, is that it goes both ways. I'll tell you an interesting thing about Karpas. Oh, I'll tell you an interesting thing about Morar. Okay, good. That's a great thing because then you get both sides of the coin. Furthermore, the mitzvah of matzah and Morar apply to women, which you know, but it's a time-related mitzvah. So how come? And part of the reason is v'higadta levincha b'yom ha'hu le'mor applies to women. And there's a package deal. Anyone who's not allowed to eat chametz, has a mitzvah to eat matzah. Anyone who has to tell over the story of Mitzrayim has to eat matzah. It's a whole package thing. 4 cups of wine, which is derabanan, that has a different reason attached to it. Maror, which is temporarily derabanan, but essentially Torah law. Matzah, which is pure Torah law. Haggadah, which is pure Torah law. Hallel, which is rabbinic at the Seder. All of that is the package deal, and it applies to men and to women. So why is usually the leader of a Seder the man? Why do women are the ones who mostly light Shabbos and Yom Tov candles when it's a mitzvah for me, just like it is for a woman? That's how things evolved, and all kind of reasons get attached to it. But men should never forget that if they're in a situation where there are no women around, they have to light Shabbos candles and Yom Tov candles. And women should know that even if there are no men around, they have to make Kiddush and Havdalah. These are mitzvot that apply to men and to women, even though the roles have sort of taken sides.
At my father's Seder table, we would go around the table. Everybody would say a paragraph and explain it. So
Right.
this way, everybody is participating.
Correct. That's a very, very good way. I see what you put on your background there. That's a very good, positive thing to do, I believe. And certainly could add to that, not just reciting, but stopping. I believe in saying the words, but I would say even, I'll go out on a limb and say that if it's a choice of reading and that's filling up the time and people are getting itchy, or explaining is better than reading, even though
Right.
reading is important also, traditional.
Bill,
Yeah.
to your credit, Hashem gave you what you deserve. You only have daughters, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You've deserved daughters. And I have to tell you, I was the oldest of five, and first was three girls, and then were two boys. And my father died when I was 21. My brothers were 9 and 12. My father really treated me like a first child, whether I was a boy or a girl. He learned Gemara with me. He taught me a lot of halacha. And I think that really influenced my attitude in life.
When my oldest daughter was 5, we started learning Mishnah every day for 7 years till we finished Shisha Sidmei Mishnah for her bat mitzvah. When she was in Gan, the first year we came on Aliyah, just 5 years old, the Gananet was doing something about Parshat Kedoshim, and she asked if anyone knows what Peah is, because there's a pasuk about Peah in Kedoshim. So Miri raised her hand and explained what Peah was. And she, the Gananet went, "You already went over the Parsha with your father?" So she said, "No, I learned it with Mish in Mishnah with my father." So she was astonished. When I came to pick Miri up, the Gananet says to me, "You learn Mishnah with your daughter?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "You probably don't have any sons." I punched her out. No, not really. In my mind, I punched her out. But good catch, Tirza, because it's a fact. And each one of my daughters gave me a firstborn boy grandchild. Privileged to have been Sandek for the three of them, and still more boys than girls in the grandchildren. So it balances out in some way or another.
Yes.
Okay, next. Not Haggadah, but I want to address Bigadol, the three different extra restrictions from the Ashkenazi world. Not all of the Ashkenazi world on some of them, but most. No, I shouldn't say most. I'll tell you what I'm talking about. I'm talking about kidneyot. I'm talking about matzah ashira, which I'll explain in a moment, and I'm talking about matzah shruya, aka gebrochts. Now, not now using any statistics as to what percentage of the Ashkenazi world eats gebrochts or doesn't eat gebrochts. I will say bigadol. The fact, I believe, that the Torah treated Pesach much, much stricter than anything else I could imagine by saying you can't eat chametz, you can't have anything that contains chametz, you can't even own chametz. That transmitted, I believe, a message to say to the world, the Jewish world, carry the ball further, take over from here, and don't look at Pesach the way the average Jew looks at other mitzvot. In other words, there are many people for whom kosher is kosher. And a stricter approach goes into galat kosher and mahadrin, but kosher is kosher. And the vast number of Jews in the world who keep kosher suffice it with a standard of kashrut that makes something kosher. I'm talking about Pesach. When it comes to Pesach, people tend to go much more in the direction of chumrah. And I believe it comes from the lead that the Torah is giving us with that extra bal yerah and bal yematzeh that you can't have chametz in your possession even. Torah does not say you can't have non-kosher meat in your possession. If you own a dog, then you have permission. Just be careful. Don't use your regular spoons. Use a plastic spoon that you'll throw away or a special doggy spoon or whatever. But you have treif meat that you serve it, the dog. You can own it. You can derive benefit from it. Just don't eat it. That's the norm. The fact that basar b'chalav, that's cooked together, went further into not deriving benefit indicates a chumrah that the Torah was not calling a chumrah. It's not a chumrah. It's a standard based on the oral law and based on the definition of what lo tavashel gedi b'chalav imo means. But it tells you something. It's a direction that we go. That's why Chazal created the waiting time after meat for milk. And that's why there are people who will say, no, don't use that tablecloth. That's the fleshek tablecloth. What do you mean, fleshek tablecloth? Technically, that shouldn't exist. You have a clean tablecloth, it's a clean tablecloth. That's what hotels do. They don't have fleshek tablecloths and milchik tablecloths, they have laundries. But the average kosher home has tablecloth they use for milchiks and a tablecloth they use for fleishiks. It's a behavior that is led by the Torah's stricter treatment of something, and Chazal's carrying that further, and then we carry it even further on our own. I don't know how many of you have separate salt shakers for the table or separate napkin holders or separate benchers. I mean, there are people who will not use the same benchers at a fleishik table as a milchik table. And if you take a close look at your benchers that you use, when you see food stains on it, you get a little idea as to why people will go that way. But I'm getting a drift of Pesach. Pesach is one of those things. Let me get a drift one more with Hanukkah. Hanukkah, it's weird. You have people who are not Torah observant who will light Hanukkah candles on a level of Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, which means one the first night, two the second night, three the third night, till eight the eighth night, and everybody in the family lighting. That's not the requirement of the law. That's a higher level, two stages above norm, called Mahadrin min HaMahadrin, which everybody accepts. So it doesn't always go the same way. But when it came to Pesach, Kitniot, again, without really nitty-gritty detail, Kitniot was created because of either storage of grains with legumes were mixed in farms where they bought it from, or these kitniot were ground into flour substitutes, which could confuse people with real flour. And I realize the time is fleeting here. Let's skip over to egg matzah ashira, here called. Let me put it this way. The first years, more than 1 year that I was in Israel, I made mistakes because I saw stuff with hashgacha for Pesach, and I wasn't really aware. To me, egg matzah, I knew that we Ashkenazim don't eat it unless it's for the elderly or the infirm, and nobody could use it for matzah mitzvah, but it said kosher Pesach. And I still have fond memories of four different matzah companies, the note that they had in a box, like on cigarettes are hazardous to your health. They had four warnings different. One had a warning, may be used on egg matzah, may be used only by the infirm and the elderly. The problem was they wrote that message in Yiddish, not written in Hebrew, and it was not written in English. And that was on the box because they wanted to sell egg matzah, but they had no choice but to warn people about it. So they warned them in Yiddish. Another one said, may be used in English, may be used only in accordance with Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim 462, which, if you read that, tells you that you can't use matzah shira unless you're elderly or infirm. But
Are
anyone,
we the elderly now, Phil?
huh?
Are we
No,
the
no,
elderly
no.
now?
The elderly used to be different. My grandfather, who died at age 69, was an old man. That's not true anymore.
Technically, we are the elderly.
You
I hate to tell
know,
you, Phil, but we're not, are we?
very happy to read. I don't remember where I saw it, that mipnei seiva takum, that you have to stand for an elderly person. Used to be, halachically, used to be 70, and now it's 80. So, whatever. Anyway, so may be used only in accordance with Shulchan Aruch Or HaChaim 462. Anyone who knows how to find that knows already what it's going to say. And anyone who has no idea what that is not going to be warned off of it. Anyway, that's not the point. But matzah ashira was also banned for mainstream Ashkenazim because of the cheshash that it might have had a little bit of water in addition to the eggs or the fruit juices or both or the wine that was made with and could have become chametz. It's not chametz. You're allowed to have it. Smart people with little kids have these ugiot yayin to give them before Pesach, because even if they make crumbs and even if they hide them in the cushions of a couch, they're not chametz. And it's there for right after Pesach. And there are people who are allowed to eat it during Pesach, but it's not chametz. And yet there was that warning, which I believe is based originally on the chumrah. I shouldn't call it chumrah, because chumrah gives the impression that it's not halacha. The halacha that is machmir, naturally, and gebrucht, which many fewer Ashkenazi Jews observe, meaning no gebrucht. Hotels do it for two reasons. They want to increase the number of people that will sign up for the hotel, and I suspect even worse, they do it for economic reasons, because if they're gebrucht and shmura matzah, it's going to cost them more to make cakes than using potato starch. But okay, that's my own cynical observation. Matzah shruya, gebrucht, makes to me the most sense, even though I eat matzah shruya. But if I had to pick from these three practices, kitniyot, matzah shira, matzah shruya, I would say the one that's most likely to be problematic is matzah shruya. I told you this in the past years. I watched with a stopwatch. I watched a guy in a hand matzah bakery, big bruising guy with arms like most people's legs, muscles bursting out of his shirt. He says, "Kemach," little window opened. A hand came out with a kilogram of flour, dumped it into a big stainless steel bowl, took his hand back in, closed his window, opposite side. He says, "Mayim." That window goes up. A hand comes out with a liter of water, pours it on. And that's when I started the stopwatch, from the moment the water and the flour touched. He starts to knead the dough frantically, amazingly. And then somebody's waiting for the dough. He hands it to this guy, who breaks it up into matzah-sized balls, puts them out in front of people who are ready to roll the matzahs thin. Another guy's going to perforate the matzot. They're baked into the oven and then taken out and put in a cooling tray. The time it took this guy to knead a kilo of flour into a workable dough, 45 seconds, blew me away, because people who make their own challah talk about 5 to 10 minutes of kneading a dough to get it nice and smooth and uniform. Now, if there is any dough, any flour that this guy hasn't kneaded smoothly into a uniform dough, there's a pocket of potential, not real yet, potential chametz sitting somewhere in this dough, gets rolled out, baked into matzot. So you're allowed to eat that matzah, because it's kosher to Pesach, because it was baked within the time limit. But if you were to take this matzah and crumple it up and put it into chicken soup, that little, if it exists, unkneaded dough, unmixed dough, a flour, unmixed flour, will now become chametz before you can eat it. And you will be violating the Torah violation of chametz. So the no gebrucht people say, "Yeah, you see, that's why we don't have gebrucht." And the people who eat knedelach, raise your hand if you do, the people who eat knedelach are justified 100%, because you have to trust the kneading of the dough that it was done properly. There are people who eat gebrucht, but will only use machine matzah and not hand matzah, because they trust the machine to do a thorough job on kneading. And this guy, 45 seconds, it boggles the mind. From the moment the flour and water touched each other until the matzot were in the cooling rack, 4.5 minutes, the way I timed it. They were able to do three full batches within the 18 minutes before they had to stop and clean everything. It's amazing. Anyway, I can't do this justice now. Maybe we'll continue on Wednesday, unless you have other questions, or unless I want to do more Haggadah stuff, which I do. But each of these chumrot, minhagim, kitniyot, matzah shira, matzah shruya, I think exist only in the Ashkenazi world, although there are Edot Mizrach who eat all kitniyot except for rice. For some reason, they don't eat rice, which fits the idea that the rice is an almost grain more than others, because we say a mizonot on food that we eat, cooked rice, which we don't do on cooked corn and cooked peas and cooked any other kitniyot. So that's their minhag. And a whole bunch of other things also, but I'll leave it at this now. If you have questions, write it to me on the website, on the WhatsApp, and we'll address them. Have a good Shabbos. Have a great Shabbos. And you could use the riddle that I love to ask any time of the year, but you could ask it on Shabbat HaGadol. What other Shabbat besides the Shabbat before Pesach is called Shabbat HaGadol? Anybody remember? Because I'm sure I've told it to you. You remember it, Mark? It's a great riddle to ask people. David, the answer is every Shabbat. In Ritzei, in Birkat HaMazon, we say, Yom Shabbat HaGadol and that's more accurate to call every Shabbat HaGadol, because in the Pasuk from the Haftorah this week, it doesn't say Shabbat HaGadol. It says Yom HaGadol V'Hanorah. But that's something to stick it to kids or wise guys who think they know all kind of things. Use it well. And one last thing, as long as I'm on it. Chamisha, chamisha ani yodea. No, chamisha mi yodea, chamisha ani yodea. In the Haggadah, we say chamisha chumshei Torah. What would be the correct answer for this Shabbos of Shabbat HaGadol for someone who says chamisha mi yodea? And I'll tell you the answer. It's only when it coincides with Parshat Tzav, which is in all Shana Pshuta and not in any other years. And that's that you have in this Shabbos, Zot Torat HaOlah, Zot Vizot, Zot Torat HaMincha, Zot Torat HaChatat, Zot Vizot Torat HaAsham, and Vizot Torat Zevach HaShlamim. Five different kind of offerings in the Beit HaMikdash, each introduced by the phrase Zot Torat, and that's the Chamisha Ani Yodea from Parshat Tzav. So, Mark, use it. Anyone else, welcome to it also. Bye-bye.
Bye. It's not good Shabbos. You have a class on Wednesday, I hope.
Oh, correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. So.
Yeah.
See you then.
Bye.
The reason I went overtime today is because as soon as I finish this shear, I have to go into the kitchen and help.
Thank you very much, Phil.
How about you want to stay another hour? I'm willing, you know.
Bye.
You know that kids who have not had in-person schooling during the war here, many of them have Zoom, and they do the same thing that a bunch of the people here do. And that is sign in, listen for a little while, and then disappear. Who's to know, you know? And, my daughter, who's a teacher and giving Zoom classes, said she has a class of 25 kids, 20 of them sign in, and by the time she's finished, there are three still paying attention, maybe. And the creative ones have developed a little video as a background when they're out of the picture of them sitting there and moving around a little and scratching.
I remember going to a hotel, because we grew up in very Ashkenazi, right? We didn't know, but we learned in school that it was beaten into us basically that egg matzah was, well, it wasn't chametz, but it was awfully close to chametz. And so the first time we went away, well, not the first time we went away to Pesach, first time we went away to Pesach was actually with you. But we went to the Homewack for the first time, and there's egg matzah on the tables. It's like, what kind of place? So it was very strange. And now, as I told you, my son-in-law is Sephardi. We have egg matzah in the house. We give it to the kids.
Okay, gotta go.
My daughter. Okay, see you Wednesday, God willing.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.